He was considered to be the direct father of all the citizens. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The personal qualities of Dhruva Maharaj described herein are the exemplary qualities of a saintly king. Not only a king, but also the leaders of a modern democratic or impersonal government must be qualified with all these godly characteristics. Then the citizens of the state can be happy. It is clearly stated here that the citizens thought of Dhruva Maharaj as their father. As a child, depending on the able father, is completely satisfied, so the citizens of the state, being protected by the state or the king, should remain satisfied in every respect. At the present moment, however, there is no guarantee by the government of even the primary necessities of life in the state, namely the protection of the lives and property of the citizens. One word is very significant in this connection, Brahmanya. Dhruva Maharaj was very devoted to the Brahmins, who engage in the study of the Vedas and thereby know the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They're always busy propagating Krishna consciousness. The state should be very respectful to societies that distribute God consciousness all over the world. But unfortunately, at the present moment, there is no state or government support given to such movements. As for good qualities, it is very difficult to find anyone in state administration with any good qualities. The administrators simply sit in their administrative posts and say no to every request, as if they were paid to say no to the citizen. Another word, Dina Vatsalam, is very significant also. The state head should be very kind to the innocent. Unfortunately, in this age, the state agents and the presidents draw good salaries from the state, and they pose themselves as very pious, but they allow the running of slaughterhouses where innocent animals are killed. If we try to compare the godly qualities of Dhruva Maharaj to the qualities of modern statesmen, we can see that there is no actual comparison. Dhruva Maharaj was present in the Satya Yuga, as will be clear from the next verses. He was the ideal king in Satya Yuga. The government administration in the present age, Kali Yuga, is bereft of all good qualities. Considering all these points, the people today have no alternative but to take to Krishna consciousness for protection of religion, life, and property. Tam evam shila sampanam brahmanyam dina vatsalam goptaram dharma setunam meinire pitaram praja. Dhruva Maharaj was endowed with all good qualities. He was very respectful to the devotees of the Supreme Lord and very kind to the poor and innocent, and he protected religious principles. With all these qualifications, he was considered to be the direct father the citizens. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Prasthichade Shatayane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasasi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vajgav Charibya Stakriva Sindhu Vyayacha Vaditana Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha. Yes, so in a few places in Srimad Bhagavatam, we get descriptions like this of certain great devotees and the different good qualities they had. For example, a little further on in the seventh canto is the story of the appearance of Lord Rasingadev, and there the qualities of Prahlad Maharaj are described in very similar terms to the description of Dhruva's qualities, although in that description of the qualities of Prahlad, more qualities are listed out. Like in the case of Prahlad, he respected his spiritual master, his parents and teachers, and just basically all people who were senior to him, actually including his senior godbrothers. Prahlad Maharaj considered them all to be equal to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Very amazing. In a certain sense. And yes, like here, Dhruva Maharaj was very kind to the poor and innocent. Prahlad Maharaj was also. And the description there is that he was like an older brother. He was like an older brother to so many people and so many living entities, not just human beings. So both Prahlad and Dhruva Maharaj, they're very, very exalted pure devotees of the Lord, and indeed they are basically direct associates of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All of us, each one of us, has an eternal relationship with Krishna. But in our cases, our relationship, the specific nature of the relationship, what sort of relationship we have with the Lord is covered over. And as a result, because our relationship with the Lord is covered over, then what manifests in terms of our personalities and the type of people we are, our aspirations and hopes and desires, and the things we don't like, all these different things. They're all very mixed up. Due to contact with the material nature. And they're mixed up in many ways. They're mixed up in the sense that in some cases, people have or display at different times qualities which are quite even contradictory to each other, or you'd wonder how could a person have a nice quality and a particularly bad quality. This is due to the modes of material nature. When we're under the control of the modes of material nature, then we are under, well, the ways in which we act and present ourselves will depend on what particular fluctuation of the modes of material nature is happening right now. And it might be more of goodness, and we might act and think relatively nicely, or we might be having a bad day, or a bad year, or a bad minute, or whatever, something bad. And then the same person who might be quite pleasant, when the mode of goodness is more present and controlling, when the mode of ignorance is very strongly asserting its influence, then the same person might be extremely horrible, even just most, most terrible, actually. This is the danger of being under the influence of the modes of material nature. Everything, everyone becomes unpredictable because our nature is not fixed. When we're on the material level, when we're under the control of the material nature, our nature is flexible as the modes fluctuate. And as we know in Bhagavad Gita, it's probably the 14th chapter, beginning of the 14th chapter, Lord Krishna says that the modes of material nature, they compete with each other. It is as if, at least, they're competing with each other to see which mode can be more influential. And sometimes one mode is more influential, then it loses its controlling position and another mode asserts itself. Therefore, it's said, for example, that people are, well, the more people are under the modes of material nature, the less you can trust them. The less you can trust them and the less you can understand them. Because as the modes are fluctuating and changing, they will be changing along with them. Yes, so therefore people are on the material platform, and particularly people who are very much on the material platform and very much subject to the influences of the modes, they're very inconsistent. Well, they're prone to inconsistency. Inconsistency, unreliability, and like this. But with the devotees, like Dhruva Maharaj, like Prahlad Maharaj, personalities who are completely on the transcendental platform, then they are generally such great personalities as situated in their eternal position, as whatever it may be, in their eternal relationships with the Lord. Someone's in a friendly relationship, someone is in a conjugal relationship, someone is in a parental relationship. Shri Shri Gaunitai Ki
Jai.
And therefore their natures are much more fixed. Much more fixed. And yes, so it's much nicer dealing with them. And much, in a sense, much easier dealing with them. So, Dhruva Maharaj, well, Prahlad Maharaj was saying that he was like an older brother to those who are junior to him. Means he really cared for them. He looked after them. He tried to help them. And he would give them guidance and support and encouragement like that. So Dhruva Maharaj, very, very similar, very respectful to the devotees, very kind to the poor and innocent. He protected religious principles. And because he had this nature, he was considered to be the direct father of all the citizens. So, Prabhupada explains fairly elaborately in the purport some of the shortcomings of government officers in this Kali Yuga, that it is not their business. They do not see it as being their business really to look after the citizens. Their main business is to look after themselves, and usually they're quite successful at that. Just an interesting little example. Nelson Mandela, I imagine you've heard of Nelson Mandela, the late Nelson Mandela. When he became president in South Africa in perhaps 94 or 3 or something like that, whatever it was, he became president. And he immediately gave himself an increase in pay. Because presidents of countries, they get paid. They're not just doing it out of the kindness of their hearts. So he gave himself a raise in pay by something like 4 times. That's very enthusiastic. And someone asked him, why? Because in South Africa, in those days, and it's the same now, the average wage of your average person is much less than in like real Western countries, particularly like America. The average pay in South Africa is approximately maybe 1/5 or something of what people get for doing the same job in America. So in other words, the whole situation, standard of living, lifestyles are really very different. So someone asked him, some newspaper reporter, someone like that, asked him, why? How do you justify giving yourself such a huge increase in pay? And Nelson Mandela, who's so much respected and revered practically around the world, he said, President of America gets the same amount of money. I'm doing the same sort of job. So, in other words, it's really bad, actually. That's really very bad. Really just taking advantage of the situation for his own material gain. Even though many people think he's quite simply, but it's not exactly like that. So Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga is such a thing. This is Kali Yuga now. Kali Yuga is such a thing. It degrades people. People are already prone to be degraded. But Kali Yuga has such a potency that if you have some tendency to become degraded, Kali Yuga will take hold of that and just drag you down. This is the nature of the age. It's like, you know, it's something you could say, something like a vacuum cleaner. Vacuum cleaner? You know, you turn it on, it sucks things into it. And those things cannot really resist. Generally, they'd just be sitting around, but now they just get sucked in. So Kali Yuga is something like that. It just sucks people down. Kaler dosha lide raja. The Bhagavatam says, Shukla Goswami says, that this Kali Yuga is an ocean of fault. It's an ocean of fault. It's not just, you know, it's certainly not like a nice ocean, which happens to have a few faults here and there. But it's an ocean of fault. And if you find something which is not fault, then it may be quite surprising. How is this good quality here? This is Kali Yuga. That everything is bad and everything is prone to become worse. And whereas, for example, the verse says, Dhruva Maharaj, when he was ruling as the king, he was very devoted to the Brahmins and the devotees. And he would facilitate them and look after them and provide for them and all these different things. So nowadays, though, what do we see? That in many, well, not in many, but in some countries, like in France, the government would like to tax the Hare Krishna movement. And indeed it does. And we have our full-time devotees, like some of us here. We live in the temple. We don't get paid money. You know, I retired when I was 21, 41 years ago, more than 41 years ago, I retired without a pension. Since then, I've not been paid €1 in more than 40 years. And this is meant to be the situation of the temple resident devotees, they're dependent. But the government in France, they tax ISKCON, the organization, for the amount that it would cost, or they think it costs, to maintain the devotees, as if it was the devotees' pay. Because people get paid to maintain themselves, but then they have to pay tax. And then the rest that's left over they can live on. So ISKCON is taxed. What amount, taxed on, what amount it would cost to support a person who, you know, a temple resident devotee who may have a room, who has clothes, who eats food, and etc., etc. This is Kali Yuga. This is really like first class Kali Yuga. In many countries, they're not that bad. Yes. So actually, any worthwhile government will understand that the devotees, the Brahmins and the Vaishnavas, the devotees and the Brahmins, they're actually adding so much value to society. They're helping society so much that they should be supported and just looked after very, very nicely. For example, even the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he cares for the devotees, he cares for the Brahmins. You may know in the story of Bhrigu Muni. In the story of Bhrigu Muni, it's in the towards the end of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhrigu Muni. It's a long story, but he wanted to find out who out of Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and Lord Vishnu, who was higher in character, who was more pure a person, who was more free from things like selfishness and personal desires and aspirations. Who was really more pure? So he went and tested the three of them. Perhaps you're familiar with the story. Lord Brahma is his father, Bhrigu Muni, and Bhrigu Muni tested him by just walking in and just saying something to the effect, you know, the Sanskrit version of "Hi, Dad," or something, you know, like just completely informal, or even less than informal, something just really extremely familiar. And Lord Brahma, his father, felt just terribly insulted, and he was going to kill him. Would you believe? No, no. Because according to Vedic culture, the children, they must, when they see, like when they see their parents first time in the morning, first time in the day, they must bow down, right down, and offer obeisances and offer prayers to their parents. This is Vedic culture. And even you see, to this day, sometimes, well, you see it in cultured Indian families, that the children, they'll come and at least they'll touch their parents' feet or touch the ground in front of their parents' feet or something along those lines, even today. But in Vedic times, and according to Vedic culture, this is just, it's a must. Because the relationship warrants it, actually. The role of the parents in the life of the child is so valuable that the least the children can do is bow down, touch their feet. And you may know that when one of our devotees, way back in the beginning of ISKCON, Ramananda, He had become a temple devotee, moved into the temple as a brahmachari for maybe a year or year and a half, and he had not been to see his mother for the whole time. And not only had he not seen her, he had no contact with her, and she didn't even know he'd become a devotee, and she didn't even know what a devotee was. So one day he decided to go visit his mother, and he asked Srila Prabhupada, "What should I do?" And Prabhupada said, "You should offer your obeisances and touch her feet." So he went to her place, knocked on the door. She opened the door. There was her son, shaved hair, dirty, serious tilak, etc., etc. And she didn't know, you know, what on earth is Hare Krishna. And she couldn't believe it. And then he offered his obeisance once. And she just closed the door and wouldn't come out. That was it. That was the end of their exchange. yes, anyway. So, yeah, okay, back to Brigamani. Brahma was going to kill him, but his wife, Saraswati, pacified him and said, "No, don't do that. He's your son. He, you know, just got a little carried away. He hasn't seen you for a while." So then Brigamuni went to see Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva is his brother. And he walked in at Kailash, and Lord Shiva saw him from a little bit of a distance, and Lord Shiva jumped up. "Oh, my brother has arrived, how wonderful." And he came forward to embrace his brother Brigamuni. And just when he's about to actually embrace him, Brigamuni jumped back and said, "Keep away from me. Don't you touch me. Oh, look at you. You're covered in the ashes of cremated dead bodies. You're filthy. And look at these people you associate with, the hobgoblins and you know, these ghouls and Vidma and, you know, these like really super tamasic people. And you smoke ganja. Oh, and you've got a snake around your neck. Keep away from me." He's just acting. He's testing Lord Shiva to see how he reacts. And sure enough, Lord Shiva reacted very strongly that you are just an aparadhi. And he was going to kill his brother, Brigamuni. But Parvati intervened and said, no, he's your brother. No, he hasn't seen you for a while. Just cool down. So Lord Shiva didn't kill him. Then Brigamuni went to see Lord Vishnu with Lord Brahma. He had just performed an offense in his mind. Yeah, it was just a mental offense of being disrespectful in attitude. With Lord Shiva, it was a verbal offense. It's worse. You know, if you look at someone and you just think, huh, Sri Shigonitai Kija. If you just look at someone and just in your mind, you just think, what sort of nonsense is this? And they don't know because it's just in your mind. It's an offense, but it's less of an offense. But if you actually say it to the same person, if you actually say, what a nonsense you are, it's a verbal offense, it's worse. So with Lord Shiva, it was a verbal offense. Brahma, it was just a mental offense. Then Bhrigu Muni went to visit Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu was lying down on Anantashesh in a trance, yoga nidra, not conscious of the external situation. And Lakshmi was there massaging his lotus feet. And Bhrigu Muni, he walked in, and this time, not just mental, not just verbal, but he committed a physical offense. He walked up to Lord Vishnu and kicked him in the chest. And Lord Vishnu immediately came to external consciousness. So it's a physical offense. And Lord Vishnu tried to understand what happened. And he understood what happened. And he turned to Bhrigu Muni and he said, oh, please forgive me. I hope you didn't hurt your soft lotus foot on my hard chest. Oh, I'm so sorry. And then he said, actually, you have been extremely merciful to me. With your lotus foot, you have touched my chest. How fortunate I am. And he said, Lord Vishnu said, up till now, my wife, Lakshmi, she has not been willing to embrace me. She won't come any closer than my feet. But now that the dust of your feet is on my chest, now she'll embrace me to get some of that dust. So thank you. Thank you very much. And Bhrigu Muni could say, this Lord Vishnu, he is on another level altogether from even Lord Shiva and even Lord Brahma. Even though they're very special persons, very extraordinary personalities, and very elevated, and very spiritual in many ways. So, but one, in order to appreciate like that, one has to have transcendental consciousness. Or at the very, very least, one has to be very much in the mode of goodness to maybe have some sort of, to some degree, those types of attitudes. And if someone does, if someone's on the transcendental platform or at least in the mode of goodness, then they will appreciate the Brahmins and the Vaishnavas very much. Very much. You know, there's a famous story from Mahabharata. I don't know if you're familiar with it. About Kali Yuga. And, you know, how things become degraded. I don't know if you're familiar with that. Every day, Maharaj Yudhisthira, when he was ruling, he would set aside 1 hour every day. And anyone could come and see him and make a complaint. And the complaints would be noted, and then they would be addressed and corrected. So it was one day, it was that time. He was sitting in the room, the throne room or the meeting room, and out in the foyer, just outside, was Bhima. And Bhima, his role was, when the people came to complain, he would ask them, what's your complaint? And he would evaluate, is it a real complaint, or, you know, that should go to the king, or can it be dealt with by someone else? So there's Bhima waiting out there in the foyer, and in comes one man. And the man says, wow, I got a big problem. I got to see the king. I need help. And Bhima said, okay, what's your problem? And the man said, well, I have a vegetable garden. And it was just sitting there out in the open. And people were coming and stealing the vegetables. So I built a wall around the vegetable garden to protect it. And now you know what is happening. The wall is moving in. And the wall is taking the vegetables. The wall is stealing the vegetables. What to do? And Bhima said, wow, I don't know. Go ask medicine. So in went that man. Then, you know, a couple of minutes later, another man came. Oh, big problem. Big problem. You know, what's happened is that I had a big, like, not a bucket, but some big can or something, full of water. And I took the water out and put it into 5 smaller buckets to use it. But then I decided to put it back before I use it. So I poured it all back in the big container. And you know what happened? When I put it all back, there was less. There was less than had been in the container in the beginning. Wow, I just don't know what to do. I don't know what to say. And Bhima said, me too. Go and speak to Yudhisthira. So in he went. Then another man came. Big problem. Big problem. Oh, I have an elephant. And we were walking in the countryside. And we had to walk through a wall. There's a big wall. But there's a big hole. So we walked through the wall. And the elephant got through the hole. But its tail got stuck. The elephant got through. But its tail got stuck in the hole. And it stuck. What should I do? I don't know what to do. And Bhima said, sure, better go ask you to stay. So he went too. And then a fourth man came. And the fourth man said, sure, what a problem. Wow, I don't know what to say. I was walking in the countryside. There was this big mountain of rocks. Just barren, big pile of rocks, and just one little creeper growing out of it. and I pulled the creeper, and the whole mountain collapsed. The whole mountain just collapsed completely. What does it mean? What is it? And Bhima said, go ask Yudhisthira. So then, Bhima was waiting for those people to come out. He wanted to ask them, what did Yudhisthira say? But none of them came out. So at the end of the hour, Bhima went in. And there's Yudhisthira sitting on his own. And Bhima said to Yudhisthira, so, what did you tell those four men? What were your explanations? And Yudhisthira said, four men? What four men? I've been sitting here on my own the whole time. Nobody came in. And what? Which four men? Tell me about these four men. So Bhima explained. First man, vegetable garden. Vegetables being stolen, builds a wall around. And then the wall is moving in, stealing the vegetables. And you just there said, what? No. Tell me about the next one. So, okay, next one, well, big container of water, pours it into five small containers, pours it back. There's less water. And Yudhisthira said, no, it can't be. Really? And Yudhisthira is amazed. Tell me about the third man. Well, third man, he has an elephant. He was walking along. They walked through a hole in the wall. The elephant got through, but his tail got caught. And Yudhisthira jumped up. He jumped to his feet. And said, where are they? Where are these men? Arrest them. Catch them. Lock them up immediately. And Bhima was completely shocked. And Bhima said, well, what's the problem? What is it? And Yudhisthira said, they are manifestations of Kali Yuga. And now is not Kali Yuga. It's still Dwapara Yuga. They should not come now. It's too early. So we must lock them up and stop them. And Bhima said, you know, what makes you think that these people are manifestations of Kali Yuga? So Yudhisthira explained that the first man, he has his vegetable garden, and the wall is coming in, and the wall is stealing the vegetables. He said, this means, this is a phenomenon of Kali Yuga, that the government, the police, and the government, they're meant to protect people. But then they become the criminals. And they steal from the people. And there's no one to protect the people. And the man with the container, the water and the big container and the five buckets. This means in Kali Yuga, the parents, they put so much effort and care and money into their children to bring up their children. It's such a big thing. But then the children, as soon as they're adults, they go away and they don't repay their debt to their parents. So they're like liabilities to their parents. This is Kali Yuga. And then the man with the elephant, he said, in Kali Yuga, all the government ministers and the presidents and prime ministers and all of them, they're all criminals. And they're just stealing from the people and defrauding everyone and stealing the taxes and everything. And then some ordinary little man in the street, he tries to do some fraud or some crime, and they catch him. And then in the newspaper front page, the criminal was arrested. We caught the criminal. But he's just a little criminal, like the tail of the elephant, just small. And then Eudistair said, but what about the fourth man? You didn't tell me about the fourth man. What was the fourth man? And Bhima said, yes, the fourth man, he said, he was walking in the countryside, there's this mountain of rocks, completely barren, and just one creeper growing out of it. And he pulled on the creeper, the whole mountain collapsed. And Yudhisthira said, ah, yes, that's very good. That's very good. He said, what this means is that Kali Yuga is just barren. There's just nothing nice, nothing of value. It's just terrible. But just one little thing, the chanting of the holy name, just one very simple little thing, and that whole mountain of Kali Yuga just collapses. And Kali Yuga is finished. So, this is there in Mahabharata. So now, the government leaders and everybody, they all know, like, when people pay tax now, they take the help of lawyers and accountants usually to make sure they pay as little tax as possible. And if they can pay no tax, like I read a couple of years ago perhaps, Apple computer company, they registered themselves, I think, in Ireland or somewhere like that, because there are special tax benefits. And they ended up paying, I think, either no tax at all on billions of dollars income, or maybe as much tax as your typical worker in the street pays. And it's just cheating. It's just, so the businesses are cheating, the people are cheating, the governments are cheating. It's just too bad. Kali Yuga is just too bad. And Prabhupada concludes the purport by saying, considering all these points, the people today have no alternative but to take to Krishna consciousness for protection of religion, life, and prosperity. And you know, Prabhupada was always completely convinced the only solution was Krishna consciousness. You can try other solutions, financial, social, psychological, even political, and they won't really help. In the long run, they'll actually make things worse. But Krishna consciousness, just like in that example from the Mahabharata, just the chanting of the holy names means Krishna consciousness. Small thing in this vast Kali Yuga, and it can transform everything, make everything auspicious. And the Kali Yuga can become like Satya Yuga. You know, ninth canto, there's the description of when Lord Ram was ruling. There was no sickness. no anxiety, no lamentation, no bereavement. People did not even have to die if they didn't want to. And Prabhupada says very clearly, the same conditions can be introduced immediately if the Krishna consciousness movement, the chanting of Hare Krishna, really spreads all over the world. Hare Krishna. Any comment or question? Yes, Prabhu.
Guru Maharaj, in the beginning of the class you mentioned about that if one is more in the transcendental platform or very much in the mode of goodness, he's quite stable. But then if we are like neophyte devotees, we are not always like that. So sometimes we get our bad days, or sometimes we are in a bad mood. So what should one do if there is like disturbance in the mind, or like tendency to get angry at somebody?
Yes, well, that's true. Before devotees come to the level of nishtha, at least nishtha, steadiness, being fixed in Krishna consciousness, then generally the devotees go through a sort of wave sequence in Krishna consciousness of up, down, up, down. You know, there may be a general trend upwards, hopefully, but still there's downs regularly. Although on the level of nishtha, devotees do become essentially fixed. So anyway, you know, what to do? Well, the thing is, and it's very important, we have to control our minds. This is really the thing. Even if the body doesn't feel good, but if the mind is fixed, then the devotee will be able to act progressively in Krishna consciousness, if the mind is fixed. So we really have to try to control our minds so that we don't just become, you know, emotional in the wrong ways and, you know, agitated and anxious. Yeah, we have to control our minds, keep our minds fixed on Krishna. And how to do that? Well, basically, you know, a very good suggestion which Prabhupada made is that devotees, if they want to remain Krishna conscious the whole day and, you know, relatively unaffected or less affected by their material surroundings, devotees should get up early in the morning and chant. If one gets up early in the morning and chants, then whatever comes during the day, one will be more able to deal with it. Particularly if one chants all of one's 16 rounds, and if one chants them properly, or even more than 16 rounds, one will sort of be internally ready, as ready as possible, to deal with the day and the different challenges that come during the day. At least one will be as ready as one could be to deal with those things. And because Prabhupada made the point also, in order to get through the day in Krishna consciousness, you know, basically fixed spiritually and not just, you know, prone to be too much affected by material nature, one has to chant 16 rounds, minimum. And the example given is that if you want to drive from here to somewhere, some distance away, like 500 kilometers, quite some distance. You at least have to have a minimum amount of petrol. If you have more, it's fine. It's good. But if you have less, then you'll find you get stuck and, you know, just in the middle somewhere. And that's a problem. Because, you know, how are you going to deal? How are you going to get there? You've got to get there. You can't just stay in the middle of nowhere. So chanting 16 rounds, 16 rounds is the minimum to give you the sort of transcendental feel so you can get yourself through the day in Krishna consciousness as much as you're able. And if we do less, then we'll find we run out of internal strength. You know, the ability to control the mind, and the mind will start becoming more whimsical, and it'll be more difficult to focus, like that. So, on top of that, so in other words, we should all get up early and chant, preferably our 16 rounds in the morning, but at least as much as possible. On top of that, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said that when you wake up in the morning, you should beat your mind 100 times with a stick. And then before you take rest at night, you should beat your mind 100 times with a shoe. This does not mean that you should literally take some stick or some weapon and actually bash yourself physically. But it does mean that you should be strong with your mind. Really strong with your mind, and not sort of pamper your mind. Oh, nice mind. And the mind says, well, you know, I don't want to do something Krishna conscious. And you must then say to the mind, oh, that's okay. I won't force you. So this also helps to be strong with the mind. Because the mind, you know, it looks like, it seems like a person, but it's not exactly a person. It's like an illusory person. But the thing is that you can change your mind quite greatly if you work on it in right ways. Like you can, and I mean in a short period of time, you can change your mind if you work on it strongly enough, and if you have good enough association, and you make the right efforts, you can change your mind from being in a terrible condition to being in a good condition quickly. And I don't mean like days, months, years. I mean within half an hour. If you really work on your mind, you can really change your mind. So the mind, you know, the mind is highly flexible, and it's material nature. So we should try to control our minds and keep our minds focused by chanting nicely and reading, keeping engaged, and whenever necessary, being strong with the mind and not letting the mind get away with nonsense. The mind is sort of, you know, in a sense, like a child or like an animal. A child, you give the child a chance, it'll do something silly. And sometimes children, they play with their parents to see what they can get away with. You know? And, yeah. And see what they can get their parents to allow them to do, which they know the parents don't really want them to do. The parents will try and stop them, but still the child wants to do it. So they push their parents. Like you see sometimes children, small children, they cry. As soon as they get their way, they smile. And then they cry and smile and cry and smile. So they're not really crying. It's just, it's a tactic. It's a strategy. How to get my way. And when I get my way, well, I'm happy, so I smile, of course. So the mind is like that. The mind is kind of highly strategic. And it really tries to take advantage to get its way. Like, you know, come on. It's okay to listen to some pop music. Oh, it's all right. You know, it's every now and then. We don't want to be dry renunciates. Or whatever it may be. No, come on, it's okay to eat another samosa. Or two. Or ten. It's okay. It's Prasadam. Come on. It's okay to take another half hour's rest. It's alright. You've got a lot to do. And you're tired from yesterday. Why? Is a real character. But the mind is not a person. And because it's not a person, it doesn't require as much sympathy and, you know, careful dealing with as a person does. You can be quite strong with your mind. And if you do it properly, your mind will accept it. Like, you know, sort of force your mind sometimes to be attentive to the chanting. Although your mind wants to think about various things of much less importance. But if you actually apply some pressure to your mind, and your mind gets into it, then you'll find your mind becomes happy with it. Yeah. And the mind starts to enjoy the chanting and forgets about all that stuff which it was feeling was very important. So combination of these factors and good association. Any other comment or question? Yes,
thank you very much for the wonderful class. But something, we should be strict with our minds, but how should we be with other people's minds?
Yeah, well, not as strict as with our own minds. Because, you know, we can sort of understand our minds to some degree. But to understand other people's minds is more difficult. And we don't want to create offenses by mistreating or poorly treating other Vaishnavas. So generally, you know, generally the way we deal with other devotees should be the sort of the mode or mood should be encouraging and not like disciplinary. With ours, you know, from time to time we need to discipline our minds a bit. With others we should more try to encourage them and give them like positive stimulation, inspiration to improve and, you know, do better in Krishna consciousness. Yeah, it's a basic idea. You know, when I first joined in Prabhupada's time, it was like, at least where I was in London, it was just the done thing. You had to be heavy with other devotees. This was the terminology. If you catch some devotee apparently maybe doing something which might possibly be interpreted as being wrong, then you should just point it out to them very clearly, so that, you know, they couldn't make a mistake in understanding, oh, I did something wrong. But as a result, a lot of devotees became discouraged. Yeah, a lot of devotees felt offended and were offended, actually. Yeah. So generally, yeah, we should try to encourage other devotees. And if we see that another devotee actually needs correction, he or she is actually doing something wrong, then we should try and help them in that same very, like in a very kind way. And if we can't help them, if somehow they're not willing to accept our attempt to help them, then we should inform some more senior or qualified person, or someone who's closer to them maybe, who we feel might be better able to actually help them. Yeah, like that. But you know, Yudhisthira and Duryodhana were given a challenge. Yudhisthira was challenged. Find someone worse than you. And Duryodhana was challenged. Find someone better than you. And they went off into the town for the day. And they came back in the evening. And Yudhisthira was asked, so, did you find someone worse than you? And Yudhisthira said, you know, I tried my best. I just couldn't find anyone worse than me. And Duryodhana was asked, so, did you find anyone worse than me, better than you? And Duryodhana said, you know, I tried and tried and tried. I just could not find anyone better than me. That's, you know, devotee consciousness and material consciousness. Yes.
Guru Maharaj, it came to my mind that what is the secret of the devotee's consciousness, that even though Yudhisthira had so many good qualities, and great devotees, they are endowed with all good qualities of the demigods, but still they feel they are so lowly, that how they feel like that?
What's an interesting phenomenon, like Prabhupada sometimes was like that. He would express himself in very, very humble terms. Very, very humble terms. Sometimes. But at other times he would say that he was a Mahabhagavan. Yeah. Even in writing, he said that he was a Mahabhagavan. So, you know, Vaishnavir Kriya Mudra Vigyeha Navichaya. It's very hard to understand the mind of an elevated Vaishnava. But, you know, there's some considerations. Like, just the fact that one is in this material world. You know, many of them will just say like that, that here, look, I'm in the material world. How could I be anything other than a conditioned soul? Because I'm here in the material world. Look, see, that's the evidence that I'm fallen. And even Lord Chaitanya himself, the devotees would glorify him and say that, you know, you are, they would glorify him as a devotee. You are the most exalted devotee on the level of pure Krishna prema. But in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya responds to that by saying that, look, I have no love for Krishna at all. Why are you saying I do? If I had any love for Krishna at all, I would not be able to tolerate having this material body. I would just immediately go back to Godhead. But because I have no love of God, therefore here I am. And basically all I do is I try to maintain my material body. Is what Lord Chaitanya himself said. Yeah. So, in other words, those great devotees, they do feel that they see, you know, evidence to support the idea that they're fallen. Yeah. You know, for example, they see that they're suffering. They're experiencing suffering in this world. And then they think, well, of course, because I'm a conditioned soul. And some of them, you know, you get the Nitya Siddhas and the Sadhana Siddhas. So the Sadhana Siddhas, those who have become perfect through practice, they do actually have pasts in material existence. And they were engaged in material activity before. So they can look back and see, and look at this, this is what I was doing. What sort of terrible person am I? How could I do that? So that's like an objective reason for feeling very, very unqualified. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Srila Prabhupada ki
jai. Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj ki
jai.
Vistan Helsinki Yatra ki
jai.